The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, Senator David Perdue discusses Democrats running in Georgia.
People have awakened to how dramatically outrageous this agenda is that Democrats are trying to perpetrate. It's dangerous. It's totally out of line with most people in Georgia. And they just, you know, they weren't totally aware of it before.
Congressman Jim Jordan looks at the lockdown.
It's really, in the end, about freedom.
And Neil Grossman, formerly of J.P. Morgan Chase, discusses the COVID relief bill.
We send people to Congress and we ask them to come out and vote on a half day's notice on a package of this size. Could have been larger, of course, could have been smaller, without anybody really having had a chance to not only read it, but let's be realistic, to analyze it.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me, please, on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. In a few days, the voters of Georgia will decide control of the United States Senate. I repeat, voters of Georgia will decide control of the United States Senate. While Democrats like to believe the Biden victory signals a new look for the Peach State, Southern values do not match the California and New York values of the two Democrats in the race, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff. They are, in fact, radical leftists. David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, the two Republicans who are running as incumbents, both solidly conservative, are clearly more in line with the family-oriented voters of Georgia. With so much focus on this single state and those two races, the 10 million citizens are now starting to see the vast differences between the candidates. Proven mainstream conservatives on one side, controversial radicals from the far left on the other. This week, I spoke with Senator David Perdue, who faces John Ossoff. Now, Senator, I've been looking at the numbers. I was talking to your buddy Georgia Joe up in Dalton, where he's on every talk show in Georgia, I know, but he calls me just always to fill me in. You've had 2 million people vote, including 64,000 people who didn't vote in November. Is that a good number or a bad number for the good guys?
Well, right now, it's about even. I mean, we're encouraged by that, frankly. There's a lot of young people voting, and surprisingly, for some, although we're not too surprised by it, a lot of those are coming our way. Look, people have awakened to how dramatically outrageous this agenda is the Democrats are trying to perpetrate. It's dangerous. It's totally out of line with most people in Georgia. And they just, you know, they weren't totally aware of it before. So we think that people are becoming aware of just how radical these two candidates are that Kelly Loeffler and I are running against. I got one that has a China scandal going. I mean, you know, this is a very serious issue. And the other guy is just has been extremely liberal on all the issues from defunding the police to he said you can't be in the military and serve God, for goodness sake.
Now, Senator, I've covered all this very, very closely. I do believe that John Ossoff, your opponent, and Kelly Loeffler's opponent, Reverend Warnock, are the most radical mainstream party nominees ever in my lifetime. I think they are farther to the left of any other mainstream party's nominee for the United States Senate. And so it should be easy for Georgia, but I want to hone in, because you're on armed services, on what the difference is if the Senate remains Republican with you as chairman of the Sea Power Subcommittee, or if the Democrats take over the Senate. What happens to the armed services of America in that scenario?
Well, we never get to 355 shifts, but it's bigger than that. I mean, you've been a great champion of this for a long time. But here's the reality. Under Barack Obama and Joe Biden, they cut military spending by 25% during those 8 years, at a very time when China was building dramatically. If we do that again, and that's what Biden is headed for, he said it publicly, if they cut our military again, which they will do, they have to fund some of these other spending agendas that they have. If they do that, China will surpass us within the next 5 to 8 years in terms of being the military juggernaut of the world. We cannot allow that to happen. We know what their agenda is. They're the number one threat to our peace and stability here in America. And that's what the Democrats will do. So this is the most draconian difference right there.
I think it is. I think people ought to understand it's between a fully funded military and a drastically, dramatically reduced military. And in Georgia, that matters, Senator. I was not even aware. I do try and cover the Navy extensively. I didn't know you had a big submarine base in Georgia. I did not know until this election that submarines depend upon the Peach State.
Well, they really do. There are two of these ballistic missile nuclear submarine bases, one in Washington, one in Georgia. We're very proud of our military establishment in Georgia. My opponent wants to cut two bases in Georgia, which would mean about 26,000 jobs. But more importantly, if we cut the military overall, we will not be able to stand up to our national defense strategy, and that is standing up to China. Building ships, it sounds romantic and all that. It's not. This is business. This is stuff that we have to do to stand up to the Chinese. If we don't do that, we will go further and further behind, not only in readiness, but in the ability to project power in Asia.
You know, it was they had to send a message to the Iranian mullahs last week, the United States Navy did, under the direction of President Trump. So they sent the USS Georgia to the Arabian Gulf, and it surfaced. We never surfaced the boomers. And we did, because the Georgia sent a message to Tehran, do not mess around with the United States next week.
Well, that message has been sent to Iran over and over, but this is the other thing that would change the foreign policy, let alone cutting the military queue. They would change and revert back to the Obama strategy for foreign policy, which we know was a disaster. They would reinstate the JCPOA, which is the Iran nuclear deal, gives them a pathway to a nuclear bomb. It is an absolute pacifist way to go, and it's very dangerous for that region. Look at the peace deals that have just been accomplished with Israel, with Sudan, Morocco, Bahrain, and UAE. Those are all strong messages to Iran. That, you know, and the other one is you send the boomer in there and remind them, you know, we can still project power. Thank you very much.
And the Georgia has all those tomahawks on it. So, Senator, I want to close by talking about COVID relief. You helped lead Georgia on its recovery with the first virus relief bill. Now the new one is here. What difference does that make for Georgia voters?
Well, I think it's an impactful, effort. But the main thing right now, Hugh, is it's impactful for the people of Georgia. They need it. I mean, we saved 1.5 million jobs in the first round of CARES. We brought $47 billion to the state. This furthers that, and it reprograms about $500 billion from the original CARES Act and redirects it to people who need it, vaccines, schools, PPP, people who are really hurting in the state. So that's the real reason the president and I wanted to do this so dramatically. We would have done it months ago, except the Democrats had been obstructed.
Now, Senator, I want to close by talking about John Ossoff, who you're running against. He's 33 years old. When I was 33, I had put 5 years into the Reagan administration, and nobody even asked my opinion. I had jobs to do, and I carried briefcases, and I learned from Ed Meese and Bill Smith and Ronald Reagan and Fred Fielding, but nobody cared what I thought because I hadn't done anything. Honest to goodness, a 33-year-old empty suit with ties to the Chinese Communist Party, money funding him, how is this even possible? I understand Raphael Warnock has got emotional support of the black community in Atlanta, but I do not understand John Ossoff having anybody vote for him.
Well, it shows the Democratic agenda. I mean, what they've done is they picked two actors. Neither one of these are qualified to be in the United States Senate. They don't have any life work. They don't have real experience. Look, John Ossoff, in his career, has only really done one thing. He calls himself a documentary journalist. His biggest client in the last 9 years in a business that his daddy bought for him was Al Jazeera, the spokespeople for terrorists and ISIS. And then the last 2 years, this just shows bad judgment, and it's a real dangerous thing on the back of the Swalwell scandal and also the Hunter Biden scandal. It shows what China is doing. They're finding these young, impressionable liberals, and they're developing strong relationships with them. This is the scandal that I think is out there that Ossoff has not come clean on. For 2 years, he worked for them, and he hid it. He got caught, and then he lied about it. So These are very dangerous things that are being exposed right now. And John Ossoff has really not answered any of those. But it goes bigger than that. Like you said, he's really got no life experience to bring. He's a career politician wannabe. He ran in 17 against Karen Handel and lost in the House. He's running now, and he's known as the incinerator. I mean, he's burned up a lot of money so far, I can tell you that.
It's not just Georgia, but the entire country looking at these Senate races. There are implications that are dramatic nationwide. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan discussed the race with Bob Franz, my friend and colleague on AM 1420, The Answer, out of Cleveland.
January 5th, obviously, is the Georgia runoff. There have been millions of votes cast already and in early voting, as well as in absentee ballot requests.
Yep.
What is your feeling right now, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff? I can't speak. You know, it's funny. I usually speak to you and ask you what are the ramifications if we lose those races and the Democrats control the Senate. But I don't ask you about the individual candidates very often.
Yeah.
These are two very, very despicable, disgusting people. And more than just the big picture Senate control, having these individuals in Congress is a big problem.
Yeah, right. Senator Perdue and Senator Loeffler are great candidates, and if the Democrats get in there, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be more attacks on your freedom, more the cancel culture mob attacking you online, more the mob in the street because they believe in this defund the police concept, more of attacks on your First Amendment liberties and your Second Amendment liberties, and that's what's been at stake so much with the left. Today's left is about taking away your liberty. So this is important that the polling numbers look better for our candidates over the last several days. I think that's a good sign. When I spent 3 days down in Georgia a couple weekends ago. I felt good about the races. I did a couple of events actually with Senator Loeffler and then five other events just to kind of rally Republican voters. And I think we're going to win because I think folks in Georgia and around the country know what's at stake.
I just hope people understand, like I said, more than just, hey, we need to keep control. But individually here, John Ossoff has some serious China Communist Party ties here. We're talking about financial ties. We're talking about the kind of things that, you know, the Democrats, they cannot seem to get, they get away with it, but they can't get away from this China problem between Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and all of the information that came out that was ignored by the media prior to the election, to Eric Swalwell sleeping with the enemy, quite literally sleeping with a Chinese spy and sitting on the Intel committee. Now you got John Ossoff a hair away from being in the United States Senate with all of his Chinese financial ties. I mean, Congressman, I hope people understand the voters of Georgia and the people around the country.
Yeah.
Literally, that is our greatest threat to national security and quite frankly, you know, geopolitically, the communist Chinese.
Yeah. No, it's very scary. I do think Americans get it. I think Georgians get it. When I was down there doing seven different events over 3 days, talking with people there in the great state of Georgia, they understand it. They understand that in the end, it really is about freedom. I always say there's a reason we formed this caucus here in D.C. in the House. There's a reason we called it the Freedom Caucus because it's really in the end about freedom. I mean, think of a virus that 99.8% of people recover from, and yet we have probably how many millions of Americans are under curfew right now? I mean, think about that. In Ohio, you know, and they're telling us when you have to be in your home. They're telling us who you can have in your home and what you're allowed to wear while you have people in your home. That's going on in this country right now. So in the end, this is really about freedom. And I think, as I said earlier, I think Americans get it.
Coming up, the COVID relief bill.
We send people to Congress and we ask them to come out and vote on a half day's notice on a package of this size. Could have been larger, of course, could have been smaller, without anybody really having had a chance to not only read it, but let's be realistic, to analyze it.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more about the deadline for application at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. American workers sent home for months in many states need help. But the COVID relief bill was held up for political reasons during the long election before Democrats finally decided to put the 5,000-plus pages up for a vote on little notice. Trish Regan was sitting in for Salem host Mike Gallagher. She turned to Neil Grossman, who formerly worked in the chief investment office of J.P. Morgan Chase. Keep in mind the conversation took place before the House voted to increase individual assistance from $600 to $2,000, but the Senate has not yet acted.
You are very much about individual responsibility and getting the government out of the way. What's your take on what's going on and the president signing off on this?
Well, I haven't had a chance to read 5,490 pages.
Really? As smart as you are, Neil, you couldn't get through that nearly 6,000-page book?
No, I'm afraid not. And I'll tell you, it's a general matter. I think it's pretty embarrassing that we send people to Congress and we ask them to come out and vote on a half day's notice on a package of this size. Could have been larger, of course, could have been smaller, without anybody really having had a chance to not only read it, but let's be realistic, to analyze it. I mean, these guys, if you look at the history of what Congress has done and their accuracy, you know, if they were shooting a bullet at the moon, that bullet would be someplace past Alpha Centauri right now. They never get anything right. So whatever you think you're reading, whatever you think it's going to cost, and whatever you think it's going to do, you might as well assume that it's going to do a lot worse, and you're not going to know everything it does for 15 years.
Oh, my gosh. And so this gets into the law of unintended consequences. I mean, I've talked about it a little bit on the program. I want you to really kind of outline it for people, because you have spotted all of these bubbles along the way. You tend to be very much a realist who doesn't love what they're doing. But walk us through it sort of in layman's terms so everybody can really grasp what the problem is with all the spending.
Well, I mean, let's start with the fact that they write checks, and they write them in big size. Again, to put some of these numbers into perspective for people, in the last decade, the outstanding deficit of this country has almost tripled. I mean, and we're not talking about tripling from a couple of $100,000 to a million. We're talking about tripling from $10 trillion to almost $30 trillion right now. That's much larger than the annual GDP of this country.
Right, which is just to put in perspective for people, they should remember, we're, you know, on a good year, I want to say it was $20, $21 trillion before COVID. So, gosh, who knows what, you know, this 2020 is
right
really going to look
like. The drop in the return is, we're still in that $20 trillion area. So
okay.
it gives you some idea of the amount. And let me try it maybe a bit more. For all, everybody who's got to pay a credit card bill, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This country, its government generally takes in about 18% or so of GDP over time and spends about 21%. And those numbers have been sort of rocked by the crisis. But we were on a track to spend about $4 and change trillion last year. So our deficit actually now amounts to 7 years worth of U.S. spending. And, you know, again, think about it. If all of us operated that way, we probably wouldn't be feeding ourselves until our grandchildren were graduating from college. So to put it into the what's going on in Washington, there are a couple of threads of this. Obviously, number one, there's the argument that everyone who parades up onto that podium in Washington says and looks at and says, all of you out there, the COVID issue is none of your responsibility. Okay, that's fairly true. Not one person in Congress has really asked, number one, for how they're going to pay for this. And I'd love to see when somebody who is being asked, and many people who pay a lot of taxes already, and the fingers get pointed at them and say, well, we have to find some sucker out there to pay for this. Why not you? And you say to them, well, I had nothing to do with this either. So as a general matter to begin with, we spend without asking where it's going to be paid for. We know certainly what the Pelosi-Schumer-led group is going to do, and I guess Biden at this point. By the way, they want to spend a lot more money. I mean, I think President-elect Biden's plans call for another $7 trillion plus of spending. Again, I'm not sure that has anything to do with the promise.
But back up for a second. Relief. What was the number in his – how many trillion?
He's suggesting seven. Now, again, when they say seven, you're probably better off doubling the number.
Okay, like, that is insane. I mean, it's a crazy amount of money.
Yes, it is. Again, let's ask ourselves what that represents. $7 trillion is almost double what they spend in full already for a full year of, of government, waste and profligacy. So they're just going to keep piling it on and piling it on and piling it on, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So
remember,
by
the way,
last
one fun point, Chris, there aren't a lot of people who actually pay a lot of taxes. So if you want to divide those numbers by the number of people paying taxes, you know, every $7 trillion on average is adding a heck of a lot to everybody's tax bill. And then it gets concentrated down.
I want to remind everybody that you can see all of Neil's work online, some brilliant, brilliant pieces on TrishIntel.com. Really, I love your writing, Neil, because it's the kind of thing where, you know, if you can do this, if you can just sit down with a nice cup of tea or by the fire and sit down and read what Neil has to say on the insanity of this moment in time, it's really thought-provoking. And you make a little comparison to, in the beginning, how your parents used to give you a little money to go buy some penny candy, and that actually once went somewhere, right? You could actually buy a few things with some dimes and quarters.
Absolutely. You know, not only buy some candy, I don't know if anybody remembers, you could actually go on the Staten Island Ferry for a nickel, go there and back.
Wow. And so what's happened? Like inflation?
Oh, inflation is certainly a big piece of it. I think there is, again, Trish, this is where it gets sort of wonky, but I think there are a number of measures of inflation that show up and get paid for in different ways. Obviously, there's what the Fed uses to measure inflation. We could talk about that ad nauseum. But, you know, there's a cost of living component in how and where we do things. And a lot of this stuff just seems to be an awful lot more expensive than any of the measures we look at. I mean, we've talked about the cost of our education. I'm sure, you know, according to the Fed and its measures, the cost of a car is not really all that different than it was 20 years ago. Now, I would bet that if anyone went in and tried to buy, you know, a Toyota or a Ford now, and ask for the price, they wouldn't find the fact that it still only cost $16,000 or $17,000 or whatever it cost back then. But the Fed does things like something called hedonic adjustments, great word. They try and quality adjust our life. And again, I'm betting out there a lot of people don't feel like their lives are that much better than they were 20 years ago. And in fact, as a lot of people say now, we're going to be the first generation who passes on a worse economy and future to our children than we inherited.
Coming up, some people actually enjoyed these lockdowns.
Because they're children. They want guarantees of safety.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. In some states, restaurants are open and have been for 6 months. You can enter a grocery store without a mask. Business is booming. In other states, you are told you must stay home. Some are requesting you tell on your neighbor if they have other families over. Businesses there are dead or dying. Much of this depends on if you are in a Democrat or a Republican-run state. Dennis Prager is in the lockdown, stay-at-home, Democrat-controlled state of California.
We have lived normal lives. The purpose of life is not to survive. The purpose of life is to live fully. The purpose of an animal's life is to survive. I'm not asking you to take undue risks. If you have type 2 diabetes and you are quite old and you have already had lung problems, I understand fears that you would have. But otherwise, especially you're young like my sons, You are a fool. You are a scared fool. So against the advice of the fools in the NIH and CDC, people flew. I love it. TSA said 1,284,599 people passed through airport security on Sunday alone. Of course, it's less than half last year. But it isn't insignificant. That's right. It's a very good question. Proportionately, were there more therapy dogs, ostriches, geese than last? I like to travel with my. Is it therapy? Is that the word? It's not. I don't think it's therapy. What is the term for the animal? Service, thank you. So I have a service. I have a service human, my wife. I like traveling with my wife. I'll tell you this: if we went through the airport with Otto, it would cause pandemonium. My bulldog, I do believe, is the most famous dog in the United States, maybe in the world. I mean, because the Fireside Chat has viewers all over the world. I mean, my weekly Fireside Chat has over 1 million viewers, and the every week, and Otto is very popular because he's in these. It would be fun to take him to an airport one day. I salute you who flew. It is the sixth day in the last 10 that volume has surpassed 1 million. TSA spokeswoman Lisa Farbstein tweeted. If you choose to travel, please wear a mask. The record shows that despite warnings from experts, don't you love that? Experts. But what if an expert doesn't agree? By the way, have we found a major surge in death? I only care about serious illness and death. I actually wish I had COVID. Be like getting a vaccine for free. Despite warnings from experts, many Americans chose to travel for the holiday. This is the way they report U.S. News. That could result in more virus cases and deaths in the coming weeks. Following then-record travel after Thanksgiving, leading infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci said it would almost certainly cause an uptick in infections. So what? That is correct. And do you know what? The more people travel, it causes an uptick in car accidents and deaths. Did you know that, folks? Why should people travel by car for the holidays? Why doesn't that cause an uptick in deaths? Is this our new criterion in the wimp world of the left? If there's an uptick in deaths, you don't do it? You don't live? But you because they're children. They want guarantees of safety. That's why there are no seesaws or diving boards or monkey bars any longer. Words that mean nothing probably to most young people. They wouldn't know what a monkey bar is or a seesaw. Because you could get hurt. Could get hurt. That is why we changed the lyrics of the national anthem at this show. Instead of the land of the free and the home of the brave, better safe than sorry. Yes, an uptick in infections. So don't visit your relatives for Christmas or Thanksgiving because there's an uptick in infections. This is Fauci.
Coming up.
I am living in a state where it is illegal to go for a haircut. You understand that? 9 months into a virus.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. 2020 was a disastrous year for many. Most are happy to have it finally in the rearview mirror. Businesses were choked out of existence. Restaurants were hardest hit. As the government decided who was an essential worker, the remaining businesses were shuttered. Many will never open their doors again. sports ceased or were greatly diminished. Nearly all the games that were played were done so to empty stadiums. 2020 was simply an awful year. Here again is Dennis Prager.
It has been the most disappointing year of my life in my fellow Americans. I'm sad to say it, because I guess I had a somewhat romantic view of Americans, and I expected more. I did not expect Americans to lie down when tyrants said lie down. And I was wrong. The listening to people like Gavin Newsom, a nothing, a true nothing. He deserves to be the governor of a state like I deserve to be on a hockey team. And people listen. I am living in a state where it is illegal to go for a haircut. You understand that? 9 months into a virus. The crushing of the world's economy. Britain's economy has not had a recession this bad since, I think, is the 18th century. 300 years. That's 300 years. Yeah. Because of the cravenness of politicians, the hysteria of the media, and the utter and total collapse of the medical and epidemiological professions run by either fools or leftists. I'm sorry to say it. I have no joy in saying it. Well, how do you explain thousands of scientists saying it's healthy to demonstrate in the middle of COVID against racism? Is that not a political statement? Is the New England Journal of Medicine recent edition saying that sex should be removed from birth certificates? That's science? So it's been an education. Spoke to my synagogue Zoom this past Sabbath. We've been getting together on Zoom for the entire year. And it's a very great source of strength to me. In my opinion, the one community that in Jewish life, as a community, I have support from individuals in the Jewish community all over the spectrum. Well, not all over the spectrum, all over the observance or non-observance spectrum. But my biggest support is from the Orthodox community. And I wish a rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi, had said, look, the use of electricity is a rabbinic ban, not a biblical ban. There's a big distinction in Jewish law. And right now, there is a health hazard to not getting together with your fellow congregants and fellow Jews, fellow worshipers, so you can do a Zoom. But I wish some had done that. Because I know the health benefit, aside from the religious benefit, of getting together with people. I would get together in person, and I salute the churches that have done so. I salute the synagogues that have done so, but they're not here in California. There was a man, Rahm Emanuel's brother's doctor. Remember, he said in March, we have to have lockdown until a vaccine, a year and a half. And I thought, this man's cuckoo. And the cuckoo win. The crushed businesses. I'm going to talk to you about Pennsylvania. 40 restaurants have been closed down permanently by the state under their tyrant, Governor Wolf. Amazing. It's a different country than it was. Considerably worse. But makes sense. My generation, baby boomers, initiated the leftism that ruins everything it touches. You know that they want to tax people who leave California for 10 years? Did you know that that's the Democrats in California? How do you tax a non-Californian in California? So, of course, it would go to court and be thrown out. The trouble is, what if courts are packed? This is an idea of the Democrats. Forget expanding the Supreme Court. Expand courts beneath it just to appoint more judges. Because the left cannot tolerate anywhere that it is not in power. It's not enough to have all the media, well, all the mainstream media. It's not enough to have virtually all the schools from elementary through graduate school. It's not enough to have late night TV. It's not enough to have the movies. It's not enough to have the House. Not enough to have the presidency. We don't know about the Senate yet. I want to talk to you about the Senate in a moment. There is one thing they don't have, the Supreme Court, and that has to be changed. Yep, it's been a disappointing year. I have to acknowledge that on every level. On the other hand, don't forget, 70-plus million Americans did vote against the left. Not just voting for Trump. They voted against the left. Half this country has its values intact. Of course, to the left, half this country is just disgusting. We're lowlifes to them. Okay? But to notice they won't debate us. That's, you always have to remember that. Any New York Times columnist want to debate me about America? I'm totally open to it. We'll take all the costs, whatever it takes. We'll Zoom it. We'll YouTube it. By the way, if I were their friend, I would say don't debate the people like Prager. And I'm not, or Ben Shapiro or Larry Elder. I mean, there's a lot of people. Don't debate them. Because you'll lose. And one of the reasons you lose is not only because leftism has no intellectual foundations, it's all emotion and lies, like the 1619 Project, the greatest lie in American journalistic history. America fought the Revolutionary War in order to preserve slavery. It's a pure lie that has no truth to it. The other reason is they don't know what we say. We know what they say. So we have a real head start in any of these debates.
Coming up,
as we close out 2020, we need to think about the positives.
Alan West with the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it, you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, as we prepare for an incoming Biden administration, they look at what it means in light of an increasingly belligerent China.
In general, Biden has outdated views of China.
And the serious and growing clampdown on Christians in China.
A government wouldn't use a pandemic in order to pursue its own ideological concerns, would they?
The Museum of the Bible presses for equal treatment under the law.
People need the Bible, and the Bible is relevant. We don't want people to miss out on that.
And good and admirable resolutions as we begin a new year.
If God is the center of your New Year's resolution, it has a chance to succeed.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. We began 2020 with an impeachment that was a farce. We begin 2021 amidst a pandemic that now has many vaccines. It's easy to look back and declare the past year an utter disaster, but it wasn't all bad. Former U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Alan West finishes the year with some positive thoughts.
As we close out 2020, we need to think about the positives. That's what we have to do. Without a doubt, we had losses. Even in these hard moments, as it says in Romans 5:3-5, even in the trials and tribulations, look for those things that help us produce our perseverance and our character and our hope. And when I think about some of the themes that have come out this year, one theme that really is disconcerting and very concerning for me is this theme about America being a racist nation. I want you to think about something. Here I am, guest hosting Mark Davis's radio show. A very well-known conservative talk radio host. And here I am sitting here at Mark Davis's desk, broadcasting across North Texas. How can that happen if I live in a country that's racist? How can that happen if I'm living in a country that still only sees me by my skin color? America looks at me based upon my potential, what I can do, what I can achieve, the opportunities that I take advantage of that enable me to sit here in this chair. In this past year, everything became racist. I even have been referred to as a black white supremacist. When I was selected to be the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, the Texas Democrat Party put out a press release saying that Republicans had elected a racist. COVID-19 is supposedly racist because it disproportionately affects the black community. But the real issue that we should have been looking at is health conditions in the black community. Think about this. If you say all lives matter, now you're accused of being a white supremacist. You know, we just got finished celebrating Christmas. God did not send his only begotten son for one group or another group. He sent it to save all souls because all souls matter. But yet here we are in 2020, still trying to segregate ourselves. President Trump is a racist. The man who gave the most financial support to historic black colleges and universities is a racist. The man who earlier this year in his State of the Union address gave a 9-year-old black girl from a single parent home in Philadelphia an education opportunity scholarship on the spot, State of the Union address, in front of all America, in front of all the world, gave her that scholarship. But he's a racist. The man who brought unemployment in the black community down to a record low, never seen before, he's a racist. See, my concern is that if we continue to go down this path of everything is racist, everything is racism, then when we really do see instances of real racism, it's not going to matter.
For more of the discussion from Alan West, go to townhallreview.com. Thank you for joining us. From me and all my colleagues here at the Salem Media Group, Happy New Year and many blessings to you as we hope and pray for good things in 2021. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producer Charlie Richard, David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, Harley Eide, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Wishing you all the best. I'm Hugh Hewitt.